This episode is brought to you by BioPro Plus. Why do our hormones suck as we get older? Our human growth hormone and its derivative of growth factors can reduce by 50% by age 35. And it doesn't matter how hard you train, how good you eat. If we don't have the proper hormones in our body, we're not going to get the results we want. BioPro Plus is the first of its kind non-synthetic alternative to prescription human growth hormone. All the benefits of synthetic HGH without any of the needles, side effects, or doctor's visits. Guys, that's the ad that I'm supposed to read, and it's the truth. But I've been on BioPro myself for a year and a half, and it has drastically changed my life, my fitness, and my health in general. I suffer from traumatic brain injury from years of blast overpressure, working with explosives, and I don't suffer from any of the side effects anymore. My fitness is better than it's ever been, and I'm going to be 45 next week. So head on over to bioproteintech.com. Click on the link, use code FIELDCRAFT for $30 off your first order. Don't take it from me, go try it yourself.
Hey guys, are you thinking about getting a new truck cover? You should be considering Diamondback Automotive Accessories. Got Diamondback Covers is the truck covers that Fieldcraft Survival uses in all of our builds and open truck bed setups. Their 270, 180 can safely carry a dynamic load of 400 pounds, and the HD can safely carry a dynamic load of 1,600 pounds. In fact, I just got done talking to my marketing guy. It looks like we're going to build a Ford Ranger Raptor with a new Diamondback cover setup. You guys can go to diamondbackcovers.com. And on top of it all, if you're thinking about security, please don't put a tarp on the back of your truck bed. Use something that has the security and allows you to lock up all your belongings with the load bearing capacity on top. That's what makes Diamondback covers the best. It's made in the U.S., ultra durable, theft protected, weather protected, and world-class customer service. Check them out at diamondbackcovers.com.
Hey guys, welcome to the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. I'm going to be your host for this episode. My name is Kevin Estella. I am the director of survival. I guess you can call it director of training, director of survival. We wear a lot of different hats at Fieldcraft. I mean, I'm also the podcast host and I'm the blogger and instructor and a lot of other things. I don't even think titles really matter all that much, but hey, whatever. In this case, I want to talk to a new person that I don't know if we're going to have to establish this. If she's on our staff, if she's affiliated with us, if she's on the payroll, like I don't even know. Because when I joined Fieldcraft, we had a certain group of people that were at the company and then people came and they went. We added more people. And, you know, when I moved to North Carolina, I moved here eventually, originally to be here to work in this office, but also get back to, my father in case, he had health issues. I would go back to Utah and there'd be a whole bunch of new people. And I'm like, I have no idea who you are. But some of those people are fantastic and they become really, really great friends. Well, this is another case of that. And this is a really long-winded introduction, but I'm going through the Fieldcraft news feed and I keep seeing the same face and the same profile pop up over and over and over. And I'm like, okay, this is someone who's obviously affiliated, but I have no idea how we're going to play this game of 6 degrees of separation. Kind of like that game of 6 degrees of separation with Kevin Bacon. Well, I don't know how she joined the team, but we're going to find out now. So I want to introduce you to my podcast guest. It is Colin Curry, not Colleen, as I'm going to hear about. And we're going to get right down to this. So Colin, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I am doing well. I appreciate you so much for inviting me on this call. It's an incredible opportunity. So thank you very much. I'm excited.
Oh my gosh, for sure. I'm all about having people find out about our folks and, getting exposure to people that I think are doing pretty awesome things. And it seems like you are definitely in the Fieldcraft fold, but we got to figure out how you got there. So let's start there. How did you get involved with our social media? Did you just start tagging everything Fieldcraft? Did you get contacted by Nate Jones or Mikey Hernandez or Glover? I mean, how did you get involved?
Yeah. So, if I can back up a little bit, mm-hmm. So Fieldcraft has been a part of my fiance's life for a long time, and I didn't actually know what they were. I thought that Fieldcraft Survival was, this like a wilderness, outdoors, survive in the wilderness, be a prepper type thing. Mm-hmm. And I went to Pillars of Preparedness, one of Mike's talks he did out here in Arizona. And that was my first time really being introduced to it. And it opened my eyes to a whole world of what preparedness meant that I didn't even realize, and opened my eyes to what Fieldcraft truly was. And so after that, and we'll get into this, I signed up for tactical games, but moving forward, we went to Mike's book signing for Prepared, and we got to talk to him as he was signing my book, and we were talking about the tactical games. And then fast forward, now I'm actually a sponsored athlete by Fieldcraft Survival. So they are one of my top sponsors. They're incredible people. I am so honored and completely blessed to be backed by a company that has incredible values and morals that align very, very well with what I have tried to preach to my personal clients for a long time. So that's how I am involved. I'm sponsored, and I'm very, very happy to promote a company such as Fieldcraft Survival for everything that they do. So that's probably why my face is everywhere, because I try to promote them like crazy, because I'm very, very happy to have them behind me.
And how did that conversation go? Was it Mike who approached you? Was it Nate? Was it Mikey Hernandez? Who was it that said, hey, you want to work with us?
So I guess it was Mike. Whenever we went up and we were getting our book signed by Mike, we were just having a casual conversation with him, and we're like, yeah, I'm doing the tactical games. And he's like, wow, that's awesome. He's like, I've always really wanted to like get involved with the tactical games, and I would love to sponsor you if that's okay. And that's how that came about. And I was like, yes, like I would absolutely love that. I will promote Fieldcraft. Like I'm very happy to do that, because this is such a great company that I would love it.
You know, you mentioned you had an idea of what Fieldcraft was until you found out about it. And there are so many people that come to classes that will say, I did not know that you guys did this. You know, out here in North Carolina, we've got a gal, Kate Smith, who does edible medicinal plants, canning and jarring. And, you know, we've got some interesting courses that are like onesie twosies. You know, my good buddy, Craig Caudill, he and I have talked about running a tracking class here, and people are like, wow, I didn't know you guys did that. And then, you know, we brought out Aaron Snyder from Kafaru, and, you know, we don't want to just be in one box, right? A lot of people think, oh, prepper, you guys wear tinfoil hats or in the basement. You know, you've got the size 60 commando sweater with the mustard stain on it. You know, like a lot of people think prepper means one thing. And I don't even like the word prepper, because preparedness is only one aspect of readiness. And there are people out there that just have a whole bunch of gear, but they're not physically fit. They don't have the right mindset. And you got to have awareness, preparedness, and willingness to be ready. But in any case, we're constantly evolving. So I'm glad that you saw that, you recognize that. And there are some people, you know, I'm raising my hand over here, that still like promoting the idea of wilderness survival and doing the bushcraft thing and going out there hunting and fishing and getting your hands dirty. Cause you know, that is an aspect of what we do, and it's definitely who I am. So as long as I'm at the company, we're going to do that. If I end up leaving the company or getting kicked out of the company, who knows, who'll pick up the reins. But while I'm here, that's going to be the vision of Fieldcraft I have. So let's get into this idea of you at the tactical games. Now, can you kind of explain, first off, what the hell are the tactical games? Because I've seen them advertised at the sawmill, and I've met a handful of athletes over the years that have done it. We have a gal over here who competes in them. And, you know, a lot of people think, okay, tactical games, what are they? Like old school obstacle courses? And it's like, it's way more than that. So can you kind of go through what the premise of the tactical games is, and then kind of explain your involvement with them?
Yes. So I'm actually going to, they just made this post the other day, and I'm actually going to read this exact quote, because they say it so much better than I do. They say, this sport is the test of a person or team's ability to utilize their skills, intellect, and previous training to complete various stages. These stages require many different things. On the physical side, we test strength, endurance, and agility. On the shooting side, we test speed, accuracy, and manipulations. All of these things are completed while under duress. Beyond the definition of the event, the tactical games is a community that embodies the spirit of resilience, excellence, and hard work. And they just came out with that definition, because so many people are like, what is it? What is it? And I was like, it's so many different skills under stress is what it is. And there's so much involved with it. It's like a mix between, this is how I explain it. It's like a mix between CrossFit and strongman and rifle and pistol shooting. Mm-hmm. And you're combining all of those things, but you're having to have these foundations of, you know, manipulating your firearm, and you have to be able to train in different ways and be prepared for different situations and be able to adapt to those situations. And so, the way that I got involved is my fiance showed me how to shoot when we first started dating, and I saw the tactical games on Instagram pop up, and I was like, man, someday I really want to do that. I just don't feel ready. And this is something people say all the time, even when they are ready, they just don't feel ready. 'Cause it's scary to see. They have some very intense videos and pictures, so it's scary to see. But fast forward to a year and a half ago, I got very consistent with my pistol shooting. We started incorporating a lot more rifle into my dry firing as well. And then about 6 or 7 months ago, my fiance and I are sitting at a Denny's, and we're just talking about like how we wish we would have been more involved in like high school and college and done more things. We feel like we would have had more like things to talk about or experiences to talk about from those times. And he looked at me and he goes, if you don't sign up for the tactical games, you are going to regret it. And so that night I went and I signed up, and I was terrified, still feeling like I wasn't ready, even though I have been a personal trainer for almost 9-10 years. So I have the skills for fitness. And I was consistently shooting, and I know how to safely handle my firearms. So that's how I got involved with it. What I absolutely love about it is that I feel like there's like a process to it. You have to prepare, analyze, adapt, and overcome is how I kind of look at it. Like, you have to prepare for the events, and they don't give out too much information beforehand. Like, I think they used to not give out any information about the events at all, like what you're going to be doing and how many reps of this and how long the event, like each stage is going to be. I think they just started doing that this year, where they give out like what your stages are going to be, a week ahead of time. So you're having to prepare for these events, and you have no idea what's going to be happening. So you just have to do as much as you possibly can. You have to lift as heavy as you can. You have to push as hard as you can. So you're preparing for these. And then when you're ready to compete and in the competition, you have to analyze the situation from what information you were given. So you have to be aware of your surroundings. You have to be aware of your 180. You have to be aware of where your gear is on your person, your fellow competitors and their positions. And then where your next position is going to be and where your tools are. So then when you're in the competition, you have to adapt and overcome. So you're adapting to any of the changes that might happen, adapt to changes that may have been made to the event, because sometimes each of the stages might change a little bit. They might switch some things up. You have to adapt if your plan doesn't go your way. And like if you drop a magazine, or like I said, the course of action changes, something like that. And then to overcome and keep pushing through, you just have to keep moving and just focus on your fundamentals of what you have, what you've learned, and do all of that while you're under stress. And one of the biggest things in the tactical games is accuracy. I have been able to keep my positioning in the tactical games, like in the scoring, most of the time, because I really, really hone in on dry firing at home and trying to get out and do live fire as much as I can and practice that skill so that I can be accurate when I get to the games. And with fitness, you know, you have to work out and then you go to the firing line, and then you have to go back and work out and then go to the firing line again. So you have to be able to calm yourself down and slow your heart rate and maintain a steady breath to be able to go and shoot accurately at the firing line.
You know, backing it up just a little bit to what you said at the very start of that explanation, you said a lot of people look at the tactical games and they say, wow, this is like really intimidating. And I think that is so true of training in general. People will see these videos that Fieldcraft will put out or other training companies will put out, where you see people running and gunning and going, you know, a a mile a minute, you know, going super fast. And they're like, well, I don't know if I could do that. But the important thing is when you go to training, you just become a better version of yourself. Like that's all who you have to focus on is yourself, you know? Yeah. And when people say like, okay, who are you competing against? You should just say, I'm competing against me, right? Like just focus on you. Like when you run a foot race, you're running against your own time. Don't worry about the super triathlete, you know, who wears skinny jeans and, you know, runs 50 miles, you know, running a 5K. Worry about you. Just get across that line. And I think that's so true with everything, but especially so with the tactical games, because when you see the footage that they put out, I mean, part of it is you guys are wearing plate carriers and you're carrying sometimes heavy rucks and you're carrying, you know, your rifle on top of everything. So do you find a particular type of person, a particular type of person enters the tactical games? Like, is there a type? Because I can definitely tell you, if I look at a group of athletes, I'm like, that's a CrossFitter. Okay. That person over there, that's a powerlifter. Okay. That person over, you know, people get a certain look, like a certain build when you do a certain type of activity for a while. But would you say that there's a certain type of person that does the tactical games?
No, honestly, there are, when you get there, like, yeah, you see a whole bunch of like very fit, individuals, like on the videos and pictures that they have. But when you get there, there are people from all walks of life. There are people who just recently started shooting and they take their time. People who have not been working out for a very long time, and this is just something that they really wanted to do. So they just started training like this year for it. They just started working out for it. They just started shooting and they just wanted to do it. Or there's people who have been working out for a really long time and shooting for a really long time. And this is just a fun sport that they get to do. And there's just so many different type of people and they all come to it for, one, to get that experience and to be thrown into a situation that is intimidating. It's scary. And to learn from it, because there's a lot to learn from the games for sure, from the tactical games. And, but I think the community of it is so beautiful. Because the first time I went, I was terrified. And I even went with a group of my friends from my CrossFit gym. And they were like, everything's okay. Like, it's actually so much fun. You're going to make so many new friends. And I did. And I keep making new friends as I go back. And we all talk on a regular basis and like talk about our training and root each other on whenever we're achieving something or we're showing something on Instagram. And it's a community thing and it's so much fun, but there are so many different people from all over the place, from different backgrounds who come and do it.
So now let's talk about the actual games themselves. What is the duration of a tactical games? Like, is it a 4-hour event? Is it like a sprint type of deal where it's done within an hour? Is it something kind of like, if we continue with the running analogy, are there sprint type events that have short duration, but then like 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons, marathons, ultra marathon types where tactical games have multi-day components? Because I know there are some games out there, like there's the Darren Fink Sniper Challenge, which they say is like an adventure race with guns. So what does the actual breakdown look like? Are they broken into heats? Are they broken into, different levels of competitor, like elite, novice, you know, that type of thing? What does it actually look like?
Yeah. So, they're broken down into different divisions. So it goes from intermediate at the lowest division to tactical, and it used to be occupational as well. I don't know. And that was typically meant for like, first responders and law enforcement. But now I think it's just tactical and anyone can enter into that division. And then it goes 40 plus, 50 plus, and then the top division is elite. Each division has different weights. Sometimes I think tactical weights can match up with like 50 plus weights or 40 plus, one of those two. And they just changed the rules now, but it used to be that intermediate division, tactical division, and 40 and 50 plus could use red dot, and elite had to use iron sights. But they just changed it to where everyone can use red dot. So that kind of changes the whole game. But they're typically 2 day long events. And for nationals, it was 3 days long, which was exhausting mentally and physically, but they're normally 2 days long and you are in different heats. So say I'm in a group of 15 women in my division, we have heats of five at a time, just for like spacing reasons. And you go at different times of the day. We have a schedule of like, this is your heat time. This is when you need to be here to hear like your directions for what's going to be happening in your course of action. And then you just wait for your time. Typically each stage is time capped at 12 minutes. At nationals, it was 15 for some of the stages, but typically it's 12 minutes. And you have maybe three or four events during the day. So sometimes you might wait like an hour to an hour and a half in between heats or longer. It just depends on how fast we're moving through everything and how quickly they're getting things reset. And if your athletes are all on time to your heat. But that's pretty much it. It's exhausting and it's a lot of waiting, which people think it is back to back to back, but there's a lot of waiting. And so you have to keep yourself warm. You have to keep yourself hydrated. You have to keep yourself mobile and ready. You have to know when you're going because they will try to, they will go when it's time to go, it's time to go. So
let's talk about some of the gear since, you know, so many people want to just buy the gear, look mm-hmm. a certain way and gear obviously fixates us. I mean, I remember getting catalogs when I was a little kid, just to look at, you know, equipment from Cabela's and Bass Pro and all these different stores, right? So let's just talk about the gear. What does the average gear loadout look like when you're doing one of these events?
Yeah. So there, it's interesting because people who are more on the tactical side of thing will use things that are more tactically sound. And then there are people who have done the tactical games who know, like, this is how I need to game it. This is the type of gear I need to use to game it. And I'm not from the tactical world, so I'm going to tell you the side of things that will are helpful to like game it. And that includes, you have to have a rifle and they have specifications that you have to follow. I'm not entirely sure. It's on their website in their rules. But you have to have a sling on it. You have to have your chamber flag. And then you have to have a pistol. Like I said, if you're in a certain division, you either have red dot or you just have iron sights. And then you have your plate carrier, and men's plate carriers need to be 15 pounds and women's plate carriers need to be 12 pounds. A lot of people have been trying to get like the smallest plate carriers that they can get possible, because if it's too big and clunky, it's hard to, you know, jump over a wall if you need to, or move or shoot your rifle. So you want to have like a good, like a smaller size plate carrier that's going to fit well to your body. There are weighted plates that people get. I got mine from Jackrabbit. That's where a couple of my friends told me to get them from. And they are moldable, so they like form to your body in your plate carrier. And other things you need to have are, those are like the basic ones. Those are the things they really check. Other things I would say that are outside the box are like headbands. You want to have elbow pads, maybe knee pads. You obviously have to have a lot of ammo. I would say maybe like 250 to 300 rounds per day, but that almost sounds like a lot. Maybe per event, mm-hmm. but for the 2 days. But that, I think that's about it. It's not a bunch of stuff. Obviously, you want to have the things that you need in between events, like food and water and supplements, anything. Snacks are so important. A lot of people actually forget to eat, and you have to make sure that you're eating. There's a lot of people who get really dehydrated, so you have to make sure that you're drinking a lot of water. That's pretty much it, though. Your plate carrier and your firearms are the most important things that you need to make sure that you have. Everything else is just like creature comfort type things, just to make you comfortable throughout the day while you're waiting.
So diving even deeper, people are going to want to know, what firearms do you normally carry?
Yeah, so I have the Armalite M15 competition rifle. I absolutely love it. It's a little heavy, so I'm debating on switching it out. So I guess that's something to think about too. Lighter rifles are definitely helpful in the games. And then I have a Burris RT6 1-6 optic on it. And that, I love that optic, but the problem that we've had is they're starting to increase long range and the distances that we have. And I think at Nationals, the longest distance was like 667 yards. And my 1-6 is not going to, it probably got out to like 350, maybe 400. And then mm-hmm. I was like, I can't see anything. So you definitely want an optic that's probably a 1-10 just to see out to those further distances. But that's what I have currently. So we're debating on switching it. I have a Faro Concepts Slingster as my sling. And that one I love because you can adjust it super fast. And then my pistol is a Glock 34. I have a Gen 5 and a Gen 4. And I love both of them. Glock is, there's just something about Glock. It's just easy. Striker fire. I love striker fire so much more because it's less to think about, but, there's pros and cons to both. So I have that. I have a Timney trigger on it. And then I just got a Trigicon SRO red dot mm-hmm. on my Glock. And I absolutely love that thing because the circle window, it makes everything so much more visible. I had a Delta Point Pro on it before, and the window on that is large as well. So if you can get a large window red dot, that's the best thing ever. I know Hollow Sun has a competition edition out now that has a large window as well. But those three types of red dots are really good choices. Trigicon is very, very popular. So those are the two that I run.
Yeah, just expanding on that a little bit more. I mean, we see in classes and from training that the old school mindset was one power of magnification for every 100 yards that you're shooting. So in theory, 1-6 should be good to 600 yards. But I mean, you just said it right there that you're good to maybe 370, 400. And right. a 1-10 in theory would be good to 1,000 yards. But if you talk to the guys from like Ridgeline Defense, right? When I took a mid-range rifle class with them, they said, we're throwing that out the window. It's not one power for every 100 yards. It's two power mm-hmm. for every 100 yards. And there might be an application where you might even want more. So with a 1-10, you're in theory good to 500 yards. But I have a 1-10 on a BCM upper that I've shot pretty damn far with when I was out in Utah. And, mm-hmm. you know, when we had access to 920 or 980 yard range, I mean, we were pushing that thing out to like 750 yards with 77 grain ammo. Mm-hmm. You didn't hit it every single time, but it was nice having that extra magnification. And then to your point mm-hmm. about the Glocks, I mean, you're preaching to the choir here. I'm always going to be a Glock guy. I've never gotten a SIG pistol for free, so I can't, you know, say that I'm a SIG diehard or anything like that. And you can't just buy my loyalty just by giving me free gear. But
right.
but I do own a bunch of SIG products. I will say they're nice pistols. But I mean, my first pistol was a Glock 19, and I still carry a Glock 19 to this day. Mm-hmm. And I've got a whole bunch of guns that are fun. But the red dot on top of a 34, mother of God, like the 34 is the hear ye gun. You know, my buddy John Welk, who works here, he's like, I want either a 34 or a 17L, which 17L is even longer. But he's like, yeah, it's just one of those guns that you pull out and it's got authority because it's so damn big. But, you know, I could imagine like, you know, you've got a 34, but then you've got that red dot on top of it. And the red dots are the freaking game changers.
You know,
people say like, oh, red dots are the future. No. Red dots are the present. And mm-hmm. when you watch a shooter with a red dot, I mean, my buddy Jerry that's out here with me in North Carolina, he had his little SIG 365 the other day, and he's shooting steel at 40 yards, no problem. 40 yards with a red dot out of a micro pistol, and he's nailing it every single time. So mm-hmm. Those seem like they're unfair advantages. But again, if you're in a game setting, take every advantage you can get. And you might as well take every advantage you can get in the real life, real world anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm all for it. And you mentioned food, and let's talk about that. So that's got to be a double-edged sword too, because you mentioned there's a lot of hurry up and wait and just hurry. Okay, you're going to be up in an hour, 2 hours. So you're constantly feeding yourself. You're trying to stay warm. one of the lessons I think that's really hard to learn, but once you learn it, you never forget it, is don't eat too much. Because if you got to go now, you don't want to cramp up. You don't want to puke. And I'm sure there's plenty of that. Can you talk about some of the things that you've seen that maybe like, okay, it's not going to make it into the demo or the highlight reel for tactical games, but some of the stuff where you're like, I will never forget when I saw this, right? And like, maybe it was someone who's off to the side, muzzle of their rifle in the dirt, and they're just puking their brains out. Like, what are some of the crazy things that you've seen happen in the games?
Well, so I've only been to two games, so there hasn't been anything like seriously crazy. Food, like going to food wise, you obviously want to keep small snacks. Like we do turkey wraps and things like that. Anything that you can just eat to feel like, okay, I feel satisfied. I'm not full, but I feel like I have some energy back. Or we have these little like protein, they're like Noka protein packs, something like that. And they're delicious and they keep you full, or like protein shakes, things like that. Well, like I said, you want to stay satisfied. You don't want to be completely full, or you get up there and you get like the nervous pukes and you're like ready to throw up as you're starting to run. So, but I haven't seen anything crazy like that. The only crazy thing I saw was at my first regionals, someone actually had a heart attack in one of the stages, and they stopped everything and got him care. And luckily he was able to be airlifted. He survived and he wrote a message on Facebook. And that's why the last podcast with Owen and James, I was like, this is incredible, because this man was able to speak about that and thank everyone for their care. So that is the craziest thing that I've seen at a game so far. But other than that, it's there's people who like, you know, drop their pistols due to inappropriate gear, such as like the holsters need to have retention on it. And say someone's holster didn't have retention on it and they're climbing a rope or something happens, or they're jumping over a wall and their pistol falls out. Well, that's disqualification right there, because it wasn't holstered and safe.
Yeah, I was about to say, not to mention that's a safety concern. You know, you drop a gun and the thing goes off. I mean, like, you should check your gear, you know, make sure you got some attention on that thing.
Yeah. Well, and there's also people who, and people will joke about it and be like, oh, the tactical games, they're just like flinging guns around and throwing rifles around. And they make it very clear. Like in one of my events at Nationals, they were like, okay, so you're going to engage 5 steel targets. You're going to remove your magazine and you have 1 round left to engage a headshot. Once you make that shot, your rifle is clear. So they try to make it to where you're going to have a safe weapon whenever you start to run the rest of your course. But in the videos, it looks like you're just flinging your stuff around. But when you're there, there's an understanding with everyone, with every athlete, that your firearms are safe. Now, there's some times where people do go flinging things around, and you're supposed to, whenever you're done firing, at the firing line, you're supposed to show your RO that you're clear. And there's sometimes that people go through it way too fast, or they don't show and they just like start flinging things around, and you have to make it very apparent that you're clear, obviously, before you move on. So those are probably the craziest things that I've seen. Only a few times with like pistols dropping and rifles being thrown around, but yeah, things can get a little nuts there. Everyone's under a lot of stress, so.
Yeah, stress is one of those things that can make you fall apart very quickly, make your gear seem to malfunction, but meanwhile, it's operator error that causes the malfunction. It sounds very similar to something that they do up at the SIG Academy. You know, here I am in one breath saying that I'm a Glock guy, and now I'm talking about the SIG Academy, but hey, I've shot at both academies. They're both awesome people. So at the SIG Academy, they have what they call the dead man's gong, and the dead man's gong is an old acetylene tank that they have hanging at most of the ranges there. And the rule is that if you pull out your pistol or your rifle and the gun goes click instead of going bang, or if you pull out your pistol or your rifle and your magazine isn't properly seated and it falls to the deck, then depending on the rules of the day, it's either you or you and your buddy need to run back to the gong and bang it 10 times with a hammer and say, dead man's gun, dead man's gun. And when you're at the academy, you'll hear the gong from across the campus. Like you could be in the, you know, on the rifle deck and you'll hear people over in Area 51 banging the gong. And it's like, oh, that's a dead man's gong. You know, like it's become culture up there. So I get it. Like stress causes people to fall apart. Now we've been talking about the tactical games now for roughly 30 minutes, but I want to get into more about you because people should know who they're following and some more of your background. When we jumped on a call before we started the podcast, I saw a number from Missouri. And I'm just curious, what is it like growing up in Missouri? And are there any cultural or any unique things from Missouri that people should know about?
It's funny you say that, Missouri. It's either Missouri or Missouri is what people call it, which I don't agree with the Missouri thing. I think Missouri is beautiful. You got all four seasons. Everyone there is so nice. It's very homey, Midwestern. I don't know if you know what I'm saying, but everyone is very kind there. And it's just small town. And I didn't realize, you don't realize how small your town is until you leave and you come to somewhere like Phoenix, Arizona. And you're like, holy moly, I did come from a small town. So it's very small town. Everyone's very nice. It's just a great place to grow up. And there's a lot of outdoor things to do. Like my dad, he worked with me. We're Native American, or the correct term, Canadian Indian. We have family in on a reservation in Canada. But he taught me how to shoot a longbow when I was young. All of this when I was very young. A black powder rifle. He taught us how to light fires. He taught us how to move quietly through the forest. My mom would take us camping all the time and fishing. And so it's a very outdoorsy type of place. Beautiful woods, lakes. Lake of the Ozarks is out there. That's a big thing, especially with that one show that came out about the Lake of the Ozarks, or that was happening there. But yeah, so it's a gorgeous place. It's a nice place to grow up in.
Now, I've driven through Missouri Missouri a couple times, you know, once on the way out to Utah, and then once on the way from Utah to the North Carolina office out here. And it's just smack dab in the middle of the nation. And like you said, gorgeous forests, beautiful, beautiful woods. Now you're in the freaking desert. What was that adjustment like going to the desert? Because Phoenix, when I flew to Phoenix for a course at Gunsight in 2020, I landed in my rental car, which was in a garage. When I started driving on the highway, it registered 128 degrees. What the heck is it like going from where you grew up to Phoenix?
So Missouri is very humid, like all of the time. It's the humidity in the summer. If it's 90 degrees outside, it feels like it's like 110 or something crazy like that. You're always sweating. It's just a different kind of hot. And in the wintertime, it's still humid. Everything is just wet. It's not like a clean powdery snow most of the time. It just gets sloppy and wet, which makes it sound bad, but you know, it's just humid there. And then you move to Arizona where it's just a dry sauna. And I remember the first time I came to visit Arizona in my adult life, we took a long road trip when I was really young with my dad, and Arizona was stunning. I remember it just being beautiful, and I always wanted to come back. And the first time I got off the plane, whenever I was older, I walked out of the airport and I was like I couldn't breathe. It was like SpongeBob whenever he needs water, or like it just sucked all of the life out of you for a minute because it was so hot. And I remember that week it was in the 120s, and I'd never experienced something like that before. And now living out here, you get used to it. We've been out here for about 3 years now, and it was probably 115 degrees consistently for like 2 months, maybe. And after a while, you're used to it, but you're tired of it being so hot. And everyone who has lived here for a long time, they're like, it's rough. Like this year has been rough. It's really hot this year. But it's nice because you can escape the heat and you can go north 2 hours to Flagstaff or Prescott, and you can be in a little cooler weather or go camping. and it's much better in those areas, but you can reach all different types of scenery and environment out here, which I love. There's no snow in the wintertime, which I love as well. I think the lowest it gets is maybe in the high 30s is what I've seen since I've been here, but it doesn't snow. So it's a huge change, but no humidity unless it rains. Like this morning, it's kind of raining a little bit and there's a tiny bit of humidity, but you don't experience it the same way that you do in Missouri. I can probably go out in 90 degree weather and still wear a jacket. There's something about it that it still feels a little chilly, just because you're dry, maybe, but definitely different.
Yeah. The first time that I went out to Utah to visit Fieldcraft after I left teaching public education, and I was visiting the company looking for a place to live out there. At the time, Fieldcraft had the office in Heber, and Mike was living further up north, and so was Kevin Owens. And I remember I walked out of the house that I was staying at. I stayed, you know, in at Kevin Owens' place up there one night, and I remember, you know, it was probably, geez, I don't know, maybe 20 degrees out, but I walked outside in a t-shirt and Kevin's like, how are you doing that right now? I'm like, what? He's like, you're not cold. I'm like, it's gotta be what, 45 degrees here. There's something to be said about dry cold and moist cold. And I did use the word moist, humid cold, right? And same thing with dry heat and with humid heat. Like you go down to Florida and you're going to get that humid heat where your shirt stays soaked the entire day. Mm-hmm. Even throughout the night, you have that humid heat. But then you go out to Arizona, and because it's desert, you're going to have that dry heat where you don't even realize you're sweating. And that can lead to a lot of issues. Now, getting away from the moist topic and moving on to personal training, when did you decide to become a personal trainer? Like, what was the drive behind that decision?
Yeah, so I'm going to back it way up. So I was in maybe third or fourth grade at the time, and we were at my sister's karate class. Like, this is backing it way up, but this is how I became a personal trainer. So my back started hurting, and my mom was like, well, what's wrong with it? She had me kind of lean over and like feel my back, and there was a large bump on it. And she's like, okay, that's weird. So we went to the doctor's office and they're like, okay, you have a severe form of scoliosis, so we're going to have to put you in a back brace to slow down the curvature, the rate of the curvature, and see how that helps. If it doesn't help, you're going to have to get surgery. So I wore a back brace for about 4 years until I was in eighth grade, I believe. And it slowed it down, but it didn't stop it. And we came back to the doctor and they said, okay, if we continue to let this go, it'll crush your heart and your lungs. So at 14, this was in 2006, I believe, I got a full spinal fusion. It was a 10-hour long surgery. They actually came out of the surgery room and said, the patient has been dissected, to my mom.
Oh my God.
Yeah. They were like, she was like, great, thanks. So then they put two 15-inch long titanium rods and 16 3-inch long screws into my spine. And I used to be a very active person before my fusion. I did gymnastics. I was a softball player. I was always running outside with my friends. Like, we were the outside crazy kids who played hide and seek in the dark and like hid under cars and on top of sheds and stuff. And when I got my fusion, my doctor said, you're limited on a lot of things now. There's a lot of things you cannot do. And so I had this belief that I just couldn't play sports anymore. I couldn't do anything. And so that's how I went through life. And I think that's why I didn't get involved in like high school and college and stuff like that, because I didn't think I could. And probably my first year of college, I was just so tired of being tired. And I was getting tired walking up the stairs. I was gaining my freshman 15, which I'm a very lean person. And so it was easy for me to like see that coming on. And I was uncomfortable and I just felt weak and like a wimp. And I was so tired of it. So I actually looked up an online training program where I could work out in my house because I was scared to go to the gym. I didn't want anyone to see me working out because I had no idea what I was doing. And so I worked out with body weight only in my house with this program. And I started to use like cans of soup and like milk jugs and water jugs and drawstring bags to as my weights. And maybe like a dumbbell here and there that we had around the house, but that's about it. And then finally I got myself in shape probably a year and a half, like after I started working out at home. And I was like, okay, I feel really good now. And if I can do this for myself, I can do this for other people. So I decided to quit my 4-year university in my third year of college and spend my last year in a personal training course at a 1-year college. And I got my certification and I then started training, and I was never like, I was the happiest I have ever been. And I never knew what I wanted to do in life. I always thought I would be an art student. And once I found like fitness, it just took a hold of me and I just wanted to share it with everybody. So I started training and got involved in like bodybuilding, and I tried strongman for a little bit. I got into CrossFit, Olympic lifting, and I did that for such a long time. And I got to meet so many incredible people, and I tried to share with them my story so that hopefully they could see, hey, if you have an injury or a setback or a surgery and you feel like you were limited or told you can't do something, don't believe that, because you can come out way stronger than you were even before all of that if you just work hard and you stay consistent and you stay positive and you keep driving forward and you do things that are scary to you. And I used to tell my clients, do big things. I would send them off and go do their workouts, and I would say, go do big things, and they would just laugh at me. And what that means, I have that on my Instagram bio too, but what it means is like, go out and do things that you're fearful of that are going to challenge you and push you and make you stronger. And I've been saying that for, I don't even know how long, probably since I've started working out like myself with those body weight programs. But I just want people to be better and know that they're not a victim, that they're not limited, that they shouldn't succumb to that, and they need to keep moving. So I just want to keep moving for the rest of my life. And I just want other people to do the same thing so that they can be strong and healthy for themselves, but also their families too.
That's a great message. And I think there are a lot of folks out there who get a diagnosis and they're told, hey, you can't do this. And then that basically puts them in the mindset of, well, I can't do anything. And, you know, even if you're confined physically somewhere, you can still exercise mental reps of doing something, you know, and that whole idea of visualization is so important. Years ago, I was at Blade Show. This is in 2014. And Ernest Emerson, who has been a podcast guest before here, he does Emerson Knives. He did a presentation on surviving violence. And he said how visualization is so important, and whether that's the what if game, right? Someone's walking down the street and you say, well, if this guy does this, I'm doing this, right? You play the what if scenario game. But he said years ago, there was a college professor who wanted to test the hypothesis of if visualization was important. So he took part of his class and he said, you're going to practice free throws physically here on this basketball hoop X number of minutes or hours per week. Then he took the other half of the class and he said, all right, you guys are going to visualize doing free throws. And when he took them back into the gym, same amount of time, same amount of practice, the team that visualized the free throws performed better. And when he analyzed it, he said, okay, well, the team that practiced, they also had those bad repetitions of missing. But the team that visualized, every one of those visualization was a swish, you know? And it's so important to remember, like, okay, you are only limited by your mind, and your mind can do so much. Like, yeah, you might not be able to do it physically, but in your mind you can. And if you tell yourself you can't, you're not going to. But if you tell yourself 100%. You can, you might. So that's such a powerful story, because I mean, there are people out there that would say, well, you know, my feet are screwed up, I have fallen arches, or, you know, I have scoliosis, or, you know, I have plantar fasciitis, or I've got a torn ligament. And it's like, okay, you can still train other ways. So I think that's important to drive home. So let me ask you, I mean, you're obviously tactical games focused. You've got the background in personal training. What are some of the other interests that you have that you're looking to pursue in, say, 2024? Because we're recording this right now, you know, right at the edge of the end of 23. And I'm just curious, what are your goals for 2024?
So what I want to do is I want to level up in what I'm doing currently at the tactical games. One of my main goals is to lift heavier, but to do it with a strong foundation. And I know it doesn't sound as extreme as what a goal might sound like, or what people might expect a goal to sound like, but I've been going to see the most incredible PT I've ever had in my entire life, who has told me I'm not a broken individual, which I appreciate because I used to tell myself that all the time. And he's very honest with me, and he's like, listen, you're very strong as a human. But I think a lot of times you do rely on your fusion to support you a lot. So we have to work on you foundationally. We have to make you stronger, your core, like everything that is surrounding that structure in your body, we have to make stronger. So honestly, like my biggest goal is to feel more structurally sound and strong, and where I don't get up and I feel creaky and achy all the time. And I'm not in pain just moving around. And the chronic pain is just constant. It's every day. It's something that I deal with all the time. And people don't see that because I won't show it. But I will talk about it because it's something to get through. So I just want to feel like I can move and not be fragile, and just feel strong. So that's my main goal. But with that, yeah, I want to level up in the tactical games. I would like to get to the highest division. I just think with my body, there's no way that I can do that. It's very difficult for me. But another goal of mine is actually to get into long range rifle shooting. I really enjoyed that. And actually it was probably my fourth time ever shooting my rifle was at regionals, and that was back in August. And, we did a long range, and I think the furthest distance was maybe 360. Mm-hmm. But I enjoyed it so much that that's something that I want to get more involved in. So,
yeah, I'll tell you, long range is a drug. I'm sitting on a blog right now that needs to go and get posted. I got to talk to Caitlin. You know, Caitlin is another new person. I've never met her, but she's into fitness as well. You should actually reach out to her if you haven't already. But long range is absolutely a drug. And there's a blog that I wrote all about that, where I explain how, like, if you're going to get into any discipline in firearms training and you want to see like cross platform level up, get into long range, because you're going to learn all about the breathing cycle. You're going to learn all about mm-hmm. respiratory pause. You're going to mm-hmm. learn about a proper trigger press. You're going to learn about sight picture, follow through, body alignment, like all the fundamentals that you learn in long range, you will apply everywhere else. Like you will see your accuracy improve with your carbine skills. And even from shotgun, I mean, people think, oh, you can't mess with a shotgun. Oh, absolutely. You can. You know, and it's one of those pastimes that I would say people should get into, because it's part of our heritage. Like, you know, back in the day, if you were a Minuteman, or if you were part of like your local militia, you were expected to be able to shoot. And by the way, militia is not a dirty term for anyone that's saying, oh, you said militia. We're not talking about like the crazy militias out there. We're talking about the militias that were there to protect the neighborhood and protect the village. Right. So, I would say that long range is a drug. I think you're going to enjoy it. But now, given your background, given your current interests, for the listener, what are three goals that you would say the listener should strive for to become a better version of themselves?
The main thing is trying something new that they're afraid of, that they've been afraid of doing, and just getting out there and doing it. That's the first one. If you don't know how to do that, ask for help. I think so many people have such a hard time asking for help, and they just want to be independent and figure it out on your own. But I feel like there's so many ideas and things out there that you know, were developed off of other ideas. And it's just so much better to have the help and the support of someone who is who has the knowledge in whatever you're interested in to just give you a little bit of support, even if you're even especially when you're afraid of it. So that's number two. And then number three is try to find a community that is involved in the same thing that you are interested in doing. I think the family aspect is so much more helpful. Like me with the tactical games, I found my CrossFit gym and they have a tactical class geared towards the tactical games. And having that the support of them behind me made finding my gear so much easier, and it made going into the tactical games so much better of an experience. I was happier to go into it. I was more excited to go into it. I wasn't as scared. So I feel like that covers both one and two, you know? So those are my three top things for someone who wants to make themselves better.
All right. So at this point, what I want to do is I want to ask you five rapid fire questions. And listen, so the other night I was on a podcast for probably 2 hours, and you know, the host did the same thing to me, and he's like, I'm actually going to put you on a timer. And if you guys are wondering, that podcast will be The Gun Experiment, but let's focus here. So he put me on a timer and he asked me, I think it was 10 questions, and it took me a minute. So I'm not going to time you on these, but I do expect a rapid response. So don't think, just go. And, I'm just going to ask you five quick questions. So if you're ready for it, this is the rapid fire round, which I don't know if it's going to become a regular part of the Fieldcraft podcast, but we'll see how this one goes.
Okay, I'm the guinea pig.
You are absolutely patient zero. You are the start of it all. You are the guinea pig. So here we go. All right. First question. Favorite food?
Banana bread.
Good answer. Second question. Most athletic actor and actress?
Chris Hemsworth and the girl who plays, we just watched Rebel Moon last night, and I don't know her name, but it just came out, and she was, I've never seen anyone else like more athletic in a movie before.
Place you wish you could visit?
Scotland.
Which Fieldcraft personality would you like to see at the tactical games?
Mike, for sure.
What soundtrack do you listen to get pumped up?
Slipknot. It's mostly Psychosocial is what I listen to.
All right. I'm going to say that was a very strong performance. Little tied up with the most athletic actor and actress. I knew you were going to say Hemsworth. You know, that dude makes every guy angry, and that's like his, like, we can't look like that, at least not without ridiculous amounts of Hollywood trainers and a dietitian and ridiculous genes. Like, why does that guy have to make us look like we suck so much? And I just saw the trailer for that Rebel Moon movie, which looks awesome. It's basically a story of imperialism, isn't it?
I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I'm terrible at watching movies. We typically start one and I fall asleep maybe like 15 minutes in. So I saw the first part, but the first we have to finish the rest today. But the first part of it, this girl was just, I was amazed. And like the way that they filmed her body movements, I was just like, this is the coolest part so far. So,
yeah. So if we go back through your questions, I'm right on you with favorite food, and I'm going to give a shout out to, you know, my good friend Alexis and Dell. I just went hunting with them the other day, and Alexis is like, oh, Merry Christmas. And she gave us banana bread, cookies, and homemade Kahlua. I was like, this is amazing. So shout out to Alexis. You know, not my favorite food, you know, not banana bread's not my favorite, but it is a favorite food.
What is your favorite?
Oh dear God. I don't know if I could answer that. Honestly. I mean, I love pumpkin. I'm a giant peanut butter slut. Anything that is, anything that's coconut, definitely on board with that too. So yeah, one of those three flavors. I mean, I'll pretty much do anything for that. Place you could visit. Scotland is gorgeous. I was there in 2012. You need to hike Ben Nevis. Ben Nevis is the highest mountain in Scotland. You need to eat haggis. It's not as disgusting as people say it is. It's really delicious.
I was going to say, I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. And, just be prepared for some of the most white knuckle driving you will ever do, because you're driving on the other side of the street and some of the turns up there are so tight. But if you want to do it on a budget and you really want to see it, go up there, but bring a tent and bring camping gear, because you can camp pretty much anywhere you want. It's amazing. Which Fieldcraft personality would you like to see at the games? Glover? Okay, I get it. You know, I will say that he's the second best half Asian at the company. You know, I'm gonna, you know, but yeah, let's see if we can get him to do that. You know, I think it would be fun to see a team of, you know, we've been dubbed the Marketeers, which I think is the dumbest name ever. I don't like that name. But myself, Nate Jones, Mikey Hernandez, and Amber. But we do have a lot of fun together. So yeah,
that
would be fun. And then, the soundtrack you listen to, Slipknot. Okay. I'll give you that one. I gotta say, you gotta add a little old school Pantera in there. Yeah. You know, some old school Pantera, yep. A little bit of Walk. Yeah, that one makes me want to punch holes in walls. You know, hopefully you don't hit a stud and you don't get a boxer's fracture doing that, which
is
one of my favorite injuries. I never sustained it, but I saw a kid in college get one. Guys, walls, they're usually going to win. Like I said, I think you survived the rapid fire round. Now, is there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to leave the listener with? We're coming close to an hour here on this podcast. Is there any message or anything that you want to leave the listener with, like to get to know Colin, not Colleen?
Yeah. So I think that's so funny that you say that. I had to put it on my Instagram bio because so many people call me Colleen. And I try to tell everyone it's like Colin, like the boy's name, or it's regular Colin, but with a Y. So I love that you say that because so many people call me Colleen. But I guess we already covered it. But honestly, all I would say is just please, like, keep moving your body and keep being a better human every day. It doesn't have to be anything extravagant. It just has to be something like, what's one thing you can do today just to be better than you were yesterday? What's something you can do that you were afraid of doing that now you can say, okay, I've been through that. Now bring on what's next.
Awesome.
That's what I want people to get from this, hopefully,
awesome.
And to get from me.
Where are people going to be able to follow you, track what you're doing, you know, see all the things that you're doing, follow the games that you're participating in and all that?
Yeah. So I'm mainly on Instagram. My IG handle is at Colin Curry with an IE at the end. And I also have a YouTube channel. It's The Tactical Esthetician. I'm currently an esthetician, so we decided that was a great name for it. And there I talk about all things, typically tactical games. I try to share as much training that I possibly can. The whole point of my IG and my YouTube is to inspire people to hopefully do these things that are scaring them. And they can look at me and be like, okay, if this girl is doing it, I can do it. So hopefully they see them as like an inspirational thing to move forward.
Well, that's very cool. And, you know, I wish you all the best with all the games that you're going to be in and with all the work you're going to be doing with Fieldcraft. I guarantee they're going to have you do more than you expect you're going to do. So I wish you all the best with that. And if you ever want to get into the long range stuff, we got plenty of cool dudes that can teach that out here. We got access to a 1800 yard range at Coleman's Creek that, you know, we could push you out to well over a mile, shooting a rifle. So wish you all the best. And, hopefully next time I'm in Arizona meeting up with Nate Jones and Mikey or at Overland Expo, we'll have you at the booth and, you know, we can share a slice of banana bread or something like that.
I would absolutely love that. Yes, 100%.
Very cool.
I would also, I just want to say thank you to Fieldcraft Survival for backing me, being an incredible sponsor and being so supportive and being following the same morals and values that I have, where they just want to create resilient human beings, and I love them for that. So thank you.
All right, guys, this has been the Fieldcraft Survival Podcast. Thank you so much for listening.